Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here's your host, Brian E. Roach and Zach Meckler.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name is Brian E. Roach, Mark Madden's number one enemy in the world, apparently, as of yesterday. And if you don't know, just go over to Twitter and you can find out. I really don't care anymore. This is a special edition of the podcast. This will be our second version of Mock Draft Insanity. And if you've been following us for the years that I've been doing this nonsense, you understand that the point of this is essentially just to have a lot of fun, do crazy stuff that would never happen, and see what happens, see how it all shakes out. So I have a couple folks with me today. We've increased the count by one. And first of all, let me start by welcoming the new person aboard who's here as a guest, Leanne Lohman, Hollywood Lohman, Twitter handle, Pittsburgh royalty. We'll be getting into why that is in a second. But Leanne, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. And then in addition, you know, my younger brother from another mother, Mr. Professor of Football, and his 1-0 start to his college coaching for this year anyway, Zach Meckler. Zach, how you doing, man?
Not too bad. Feels good after being a victory Wednesday, you know, of all days. You know, with COVID, we're doing what we can do, and playing football on Tuesdays is sometimes part of that. So here we are.
And here's the story. So Zach gives us the link to the Utica website so I can watch it, and I spend – just an inordinate amount of time like this, looking real close, trying to find Zach on the sidelines. And I said, Zach, I'm taking screenshots. Is this you, man? Is this you? He's like, no, man, I was up in the booth. I'm like,
I
dude.
I should have told you guys that beforehand. I'd be up in the box and not down in the field.
I'm like, oh, okay, well, whatever.
I've been like, I'm the big muscular guy on the left. I'm the great big guy towering over everybody else.
Just tell them whatever they want to hear.
There you go. All right. So before we get going, Leanne, I need to ask this question. As I said, I'm going to hint at it. Your Twitter bio says you are Pittsburgh royalty.
Yeah.
I've never met royalty. I need to know why you are Pittsburgh royalty.
So it started actually as a joke. My dad played for the Steelers. Back a long time ago, he was drafted by the Steelers out of college. He played at William & Mary for Marv Levy and then went on back home to his hometown. He's from Elizabeth to play for the Steelers, which was super exciting. He was actually drafted out of high school to play baseball for the Minnesota Twins and turned it down. My grandfather wanted him to go to college. So it started as a joke because we moved away from Pittsburgh. I spent most of my life growing up outside of D.C. in Northern Virginia and stayed there for most of my adult life. And when I first started getting really involved on Twitter and as a Steelers fan, I got a lot of pushback from people who were like, well, you can't be a Pittsburgh fan. You don't even live in this city anymore. And I'm like, well, I did. And just because I don't now doesn't mean I can't be a fan. So it started as kind of a joke. So when I told my mother about it, she said, well, you just need to tell them you're Pittsburgh royalty. And I was like, you know what? You're right. That makes total sense. It makes as much sense as anybody else's stupid logic. I'm putting it in my bio. So there it is. My
exactly
dad's not here
right.
anymore. My dad's not here anymore, but he would love it. He would think that was the greatest thing ever.
I think it's great. You're absolutely right. It makes as much sense as anything else.
Right.
All right. So for those who have followed along, this is Mock Draft Insanity. Mock Draft Insanity essentially means I've gone insane, right? So as you all know, I have to watch draft day before I put together the scenarios. So this is now my second time through, which generally means the scenario sometimes gets crazier than it did the first time around, because now I've had to sit through 4 hours of Kevin Costner. But this is the way it works. Just like I did last time, I went after the Jets and I decided I'm going to offer the Jets pretty much everything from the 2021 draft. And so I did. And I got back everything I wanted, which is essentially their second, 23rd, 34th, 66th, all their picks, right? Hooray. I get everything up through the first three rounds. Then I trade back from two with the Panthers to eight. I get stuff from next year for the Panthers, as well as their 39th pick this year. I trade back again with the Vikings from 8 to 14. I get Vikings at 14, plus their 66 pick. So when all this is said and done, I have for 2021 picks 14, 23, 24, 34, 39, 55, 66, 78, 87, and 128, because I also traded them all the crud 7th round, 6th round, 5th round picks that I didn't want. And maybe that was to keep the show shorter. I'll never tell. So I also end up with, in 2022, two firsts, 2 seconds, actually 3 seconds, and 2/3. That's all I got, though. But I think we could live with that, right? We can equate that into Ben's replacement that way. Yeah, sure. Why not? So that's how we all started. Everybody has been given that as their beginning setup. And we are all sitting at 14 with our first pick. And they all know what I did because I told them. So I'm going to go last here. And since we have a guest, we should be polite. Leanne, you are on the board. 14 Pittsburgh Steelers. What do they do?
I just want to start by saying that I did not pick, like all Alabama, despite wearing my Roll Tide tank top tonight, did not go with the full Alabama draft that I would love to see someday. I picked Kyle Pitts, the tight end out of Florida. I really like Kyle. I think there's a chance he could still be there at 14. I know they're talking about him going to the Eagles. I think the Eagles need a wide receiver more, despite some of their recent moves. I think they're going to stick with him. I think this kid is versatile. I'm not married to Eric Ebron. I think he'd be okay, but he's not great. And I like how versatile this kid is. One of the things I really like about him is that he's had so much experience. He played quarterback in high school, so I think he could bring back some of those like trick plays in Pittsburgh that we love so much that we haven't been able to do lately. I think he just provides us a lot of options. I like
it. All right. I don't dislike it at all, and it's certainly realistic because they definitely have needed tight end. So I could live with that if this craziness occurred. Zach, what did you do, my friend? Or what are you doing as we speak, since you're flying by the seat of your pants?
That actually was probably the easiest one I had of all of them. I actually have done with Rashawn Slater out of Northwestern. So, you know, he's labeled as a tackle. I've watched him enough to, you know, get a feel for his versatility. I don't think he's going to be a tackle at the next level. I really do think that realistically some team is going to give him the opportunity to play that. You know, he's too good of an athlete to not at least kick the tires on him there. But I do think his best fit is going to be on the interior. And whether that's center or guard, I don't know. But the Steelers, I think, have long-term questions there. I mean, B.J. Finney's not going to be the long-term answer. He's a Band-Aid on a bullet wound at this point. You know, I think he's really just going to kind of be there for the time being. DeCastro, I do think he played through injury, but I do think he's very close to just calling it quits and having his career come to an end. And even though I do like Kevin Dotson, you know, I would like to see him be the full-time starter nonstop for an entire season, which he's pegged to be at this point. But even with him being there at the left guard, you still have questions long-term and in the short term of both center and right guard. I really do have questions about the interior of this offensive line class, especially, you know, at center. I think Rashawn Slater is one of those guys and one of the few prospects you see every year that where he goes in and he can play on the inside after not having a ton of experience there, after being attacked predominantly in college. But his bumping in is not because of athletic traits. A lot of guys move inside because they're just not good enough athletes. He's the rare case where he's a very good athlete, but his length and just overall lack of bulk are just not there. But he still gets after. He's still very strong. He's still very potent in the run game and pass game. I think he'd be an instant upgrade on the interior for them in the long term.
All right. You'll learn quickly. There's a lot of O-line love that goes on in this in this show, because Zach being an ex-offensive lineman, me being an ex-offensive lineman, we got a lot of O-line love that happens. I didn't go
and
that
we
way,
need
though. Yeah, well, there's no question. Yeah. No question. But I didn't go that way. And the reason was, sitting at 14, there was a guy that I thought probably might have gone in the top 10. I really didn't expect him to slip past Dallas, but he did. And that's Patrick Surtain. He's a cornerback. And look, I'm not Roll Tide. I'm, like I said, O-H-I-O. You know, I'm a Buckeye. So
he's great, though.
Yeah, it sticks in my craw a little bit. But I mean, this is a guy. He's got a lot of the things that the Steelers like. He's got essentially that pedigree. His father was a American Heritage High School guy. He was a top 10 recruit. All kind of stuff that looks good. He's got the height. He's got the skills. I couldn't pass him up. And I have a million other picks, so what do I care? Right? I got a lot of other ways to fill this void. But I got to tell you, I did not consider the fact that Slater could slide inside and play center. That did not enter my thought. I thought, okay, he is what he is. And that's so shame on me. I haven't looked at him enough. All right.
So it's a lack of experience there. It's not like he was playing a lot of center at any at all, really. And that's really just a projection type of thing where you consider it bad that hopefully he's a Northwestern offensive lineman that can catch on to it quickly. And, I think, those athletic traits, I think that's one thing that all the centers in this class are lacking, and just the athletic traits to really get after it. And the Steelers have been spoiled with an athletic center like Marquise Pouncey, Creed Humphrey and, Landon Dickerson and all those guys, they're good talents and power game, but you're never going to be really pulling them. The Steelers like to pull their center so much. And I think that's going to be a trend that continues even with Matt Canada. We don't know what to expect out of his offense, but it's just such a staple there. And if you have a center that can pull, it just opens up your offensive line play that much better. So,
yep. All right. So that moves us from 14 down to 23. And we get to double up here since we're both 23 and 24. And I will let you guys know, I did not tell either Zach or Leanne that they could not trade out of a spot that they were in. They may not have chosen to do so, but I didn't tell them they couldn't. I didn't. So we're 23, and we may as well just keep the same. But I'm going to, since we're 23 and 24, I'm going to let you hit them both at the same time. And Leanne, again, you're on the board.
Okay, so for 23, I went with a little bit of a wild card, and I picked Gregory Rousseau out of Missouri. I really like him. He's an edge. I think he's a freak of nature. The kid is raw, and he needs serious work. Somebody will have to coach him, and somebody will have to really help him through, I think, adapting to like a professional level of play. He didn't get a lot of time in college because of COVID and all the craziness, but the kid is an absolute beast. I mean, the film on him is incredible to watch. He's got a lot of versatility. I think on defense, he could really fill in for some of those spaces. And I have to say, I kept going back and looking at him because I didn't want to pick him because I like Alex Highsmith so much. And I think he's going to bring a lot to the table. So I really had kind of steered away. I was like, well, we don't need Bud's replacement. But then I thought we need depth. And this kid could really come in and be something that bolsters our defense. Defense wins championships. And I think this kid has the ability in the right system to be really good. I think he needs to be somewhere where he's going to be handled and disciplined.
All right.
I like the kid.
All right. Zach, any thoughts on him?
I like him. Yeah, no, he's definitely, I think he kind of fits the stereotypical Steelers pick. He's young. I think that's one thing that a lot of people kind of overlook. The Steelers have a track record of going young in the first round. And then, so many people want to pick guys like, Tevin Jenkins and whatnot. I think that's a very uncharacteristic Steelers move. In a non-draft insanity world where they don't have 15 first round picks, Like, I think that's a very uncharacteristic move. They typically like the young guys with pedigree, and he's a young guy with pedigree. So this move makes sense. And obviously they haven't shied away from ACC players before. So,
I actually, and he does have traits that remind me of Bud in the sense that when Bud came out, he was labeled as a project. It took him time. We've preached that for years here. Give Bud time. He shows the traits. Same thing could be said for this guy. All right. So at 24, what did you
say? So at 24, now that he just trashed Tevin Jenkins, I have Tevin Jenkins at 24.
I like Jenkins for the record.
Whatever. You're like too Jenkins. Late now. You can't backpedal. But what I like about him is that I like that he can play both sides. I like that he has that versatility. I like that we could use him on either side of the line. I think that that's really important considering there's so much upheaval right now on our offensive line with so many players having left and still not knowing what's happening. I like that he has the ability to do a lot of stuff. He is a little bit more athletic and agile than some of the other guys on O-line, and I think that works in his favor really well. he sets kind of a really wide base, and I like that. I like that he's not easy to run through. I think he's a big kid, and I think that while he's not a typical, I agree, he's not a typical Steelers pick. I think he could be a good one, and I think he's had some experience playing in Big 12.
All right. Again, you're never going to get arguments for O-line picks from us.
I do like Jenkins a lot. I just want to put that out there. I think he is very firm.
I was only teasing you.
He's firmly a top 40 pick in my eyes.
Yeah. I was only teasing you.
All right. Zach, 23, my friend.
So I wasn't leaning this direction until yesterday or the day before, whenever the Steelers were kind of showing interest in him with the big dogs, Tomlin and Colbert, going down to the pro day. But I'm going kind of with a similar thought process that you had with Surtain in the first round and with the first pick. I'm going with J.C. Horn here in the second one. I think he kind of fits that bill. I think he's really kind of that Steelers stereotypical boom or bust prospect that so many people criticize him with, and the fact that when you look at all the raw traits that are there, he has the talent to be a very, 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 very productive pro. I mean, he has the size and the bulk. You kind of had concerns about his run defending a little bit because he's really not that physical of a defender. But truth be told, there's been a lot of guys that Steelers have drafted on the outside. I mean, Cam Sutton, whoever wants to keep his biggest knock has been his run defending, and the Steelers should still keep him over Mike Hilton. So they haven't shied away from that in the past. But I think he's very much a very good press corner. I think he does very well in man coverage. And the Steelers have really shied away from the Dick LeBeau days where they're in zone defense 24/7. They do ask a lot of man coverage from their corners, and I do think Jason Horn has that. I think he also has the pedigree. Steelers love pedigree. They love bloodlines, his dad being Joe Horn. So, he has the bloodlines there, and he has the age. But again, he's a junior. He's an underclassman. He played in an SEC program, and he's going to check all the boxes after testing out the gym his pro day. It doesn't really surprise me the Steelers are showing interest. And even just with their other needs, they're going to probably address corner. I know they have the bodies there, but I think they'll address corner at some point when they have, three first-round picks. You might as well spend one on a pedigree guy like Warren and just let him go and do his thing. So I decided to go that route here.
I can't argue with you about it. I think it does start to fit into the need of what they've got going, and it provides growth and depth. But I couldn't do it because I already picked Surtain. Leanne, any thoughts on that pick?
No, I agree. I think it's a great pick, and I agree a lot about the pedigree. I think that's always a factor for the Steelers. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think he'd fit in nicely.
Yep. All right, 24, sir.
I had to do it. I'm unsurprisingly avoided Najee Harris here, and I decided to go with Travis Etienne. Because I have to go with my Clemson fandom, and I do think that Najee Harris, I think that Travis Etienne, I do think Javonte Williams are all going to be very productive pros, depending on what system they get drafted into. But yeah. I just think in my mind with what the Steelers are potentially doing in the realm of being potentially more zone heavy scheme as opposed to like the traditional power, I do think Najee Harris could be that scheme transcendent running back. But I really think Travis Etienne is more of that fit for them. He's going to get criticized for his tread and wear and tear. He's going to be criticized because of his lack of vision at times, because there's times where he misses some very blatant cutback lanes, and his running back coach, that kind of makes me a little bit annoyed. But, I think that those are things you can work on. And to be fair, he never really had to work on that when he was in as talented of an offense as he was at Clemson. I just think that he's a spark plug that you put in there. I think he really adds a burst and some explosion. And that's what my biggest knock on Najee Harris. People complained about James Conner's second year. They complained about Le'Veon Bell's second year. They complained about a lot of players that came through the system's second years. Najee Harris is the same thing, in my opinion, where he's a very explosive player. But unlike Derrick Henry gets rolling, but when he gets in that second, third level, you're not stopping. I do think Najee Harris has that relentless motor, but he doesn't have that second gear to run away from people. I do think NTM, when he gets in the open field, he's distancing himself from people. He's a legitimate 4-4 running back, and he just has the receiving ability, the running ability. I just think he would be the need that they need to kind of be that three down back for them and just be able to do a lot of different stuff with them. So,
well, considering that that's who I took at 24, I'm not going to yell, right?
It's no knock on Najee Harris. I'm sorry for you being a fan.
No, I know. He's a phenomenal player.
You can't go wrong with the top three. I think people are trying to say that one is a generational talent and the other two aren't. All three are very good.
I think all three of them are, and I think you really hit the nail on the head when you said it depends on what system they go into. It's sort of like we do with some of these young quarterbacks. Some of these kids just can't be thrown to the wolves, and then you expect them to be the next Tom Brady. It's not realistic, and it's not fair. And so I think it's the same for some of these running backs. You put them in a position in a system they're not familiar with at a level that they haven't played before, even if they have played at a high level like Clemson or Alabama, which is about as close to professional football as you can get in college. It's still not the same. And then, you know, and then like you said, then we criticize them. And I don't know that I think that's fair.
I agree.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. All right. So at 23 for me, I went youth, similar to what you guys have done. I looked at what the Steelers do and I went younger. The guy I took, I think was a redshirt sophomore. And I have to give credit to Zach because he's the one that keyed me into this gentleman. I took Jalen Mayfield. Partly because everybody else was gone. I would have taken some of the other tackles that were on the board, but they were all gone. So I didn't want to get down into the second round or you know, keep going. And I figured, all right, do I take Mayfield here? Do I take him in the next, you know, do I try and get something at 23, 24? And I decided, nope, I'm going to take him. I like this kid a lot. I like his feet. After you pointed him out to me, I actually started to go look at him a little bit. I think he's got a lot of athletic ability. I like his hustle. I think he's athletic enough to get out and do damage in the screen games. I like the way he comes out of his stance when he does run blocking. There's just a lot I like about him. He needs to get stronger than he is, I think. So the nice thing about this is, again, he's young. He's really young, and that'll give him some time to grow. I don't expect, even though he's at this point is a first round pick, I don't expect him to be a starter or maybe even a full time contributor this year. But I think it sets them up going forward. And then I picked ATN, right? And for all the reasons you said, and I guess more because the Buckeyes beat Clemson, so I don't have to feel bad about them. And then, you know, Tide beat us, and I don't want to talk about it. So be that as it said. All right, so that's our first round. That's the first round for us. Still not too bad. And now we've got, I don't know, a whole bunch of picks in the second round. But 34 is next on the clock. The Steelers come back on the clock, two picks into the second round at 34. We'll flip it and go and start with Zach this time and go the other way around. Zach, I know, because you're so prepared and ready. What'd you do at 34?
So again, like I'm very big when I do my mock drafts. I try to pay attention to where the Steelers are going, where Mike Tomlin is, where Kevin Colbert is, what position coaches are where. And, you know, Nick Bolton from Missouri, linebacker, you know, he's again a guy that I think that the Steelers show legitimate interest in. I think it's because he's a marginally more athletic playing style, what we saw with Vince Williams, and obviously Vince Williams no longer being in Steel City. They're going to probably look to upgrade the position. I mean, they have Devin Bush. Devin Bush is their guy. There's no question about it. The defense was different when he went out, before even Bud Dupree went out. I do think they're going to have to address linebacker at some point in time. There's no way, in my mind, I see them rolling in there with just Bush, Spillane, and then, you know, Ulysses Gilbert III, who they're high on, but hasn't been able to stay healthy for his first two seasons in the league. I think they added at some point in time. I think it happened somewhere earlier than some fans might expect it. I wouldn't be surprised to see it go somewhere between the second and third or second and fourth round. But I think with their interest in a guy like Nick Bolton, who's going to be in that kind of fringe first round category, I think that he's really a guy that they're probably showing legitimate interest in, because he's a guy that probably could step in early on, or at least a year or two in the latest, and probably be the guy next to Bush. And he really gives you that nice, firm kind of Mike Backer type of look there, where you probably trust him to call the defense out. He's a very explosive player. He kind of has more of a compact frame. He's not going to remind you like a slender Ryan Shazier type, you know, but he looks the part of an NFL linebacker. And I think realistically, look at him in zone coverage. He drops back. He has nice fluidity. And he really gets upfield and blitzes really heavily downfield, which we've seen Vince Williams do a ton of. You know, I hate to sit there and say they're just going to look for his clone, but I do see a lot of his game just in a more athletic profile with Bolton. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him be someone that they legitimately consider to kind of fill that void, because I think that's now a position that even without Vince Williams being cut, he was getting older and his contract was going to expire. And Spillane, I don't know if it's ever going to be the long-term answer there. So I think linebacker was really a necessary move here. And with their interest in some of these guys, including a guy with the pedigree of Bolden, I think it would really make sense there.
Again, linebacker is another thing you never get me to argue about. Yeah. Leanna, any thoughts on that?
I like the kid. I agree. I think he's got surprising speed, which is not something you always expect to see from somebody playing linebacker. I think he has some surprising speed. I think he's very aggressive, which I really like to see. And I think he fits in. He kind of would mesh nicely. I agree about everything Zach said about Spillane and about the rest of our defense. I think Vince is aging. I agree with all of that. I think we have to look at some real long-term solutions. And while we have those veteran guys there providing the leadership to kind of work on firming up some of those other positions and building some depth from people that we hope will be our starters.
Absolutely. All right. So that brings us to you again. So what did you do at 34?
So
actually, you know, whatever you chose.
So I took Landon Dickerson, and I really actually had Creed Humphrey on all of my mock drafts. I had him on everything. I had him. And then I said, well, let me sit and watch some more tape of some of these. I watch a lot of college football, but let me really like hone in and just watch these guys. And it totally swayed me. The thing that swayed me on Landon Dickerson is how nasty he is. And I love that. I love that for the Steelers. I think that fits in with what we do. I mean, nasty in the best possible way. I think he's super aggressive. I think he's very physical. I think he kind of plays that, you know, he's not afraid to get in there and get his hands dirty. He's not afraid to provide that blocking and just be a big force up front. And I like him. I like that about him. I know he's had some injuries and some things work against him, but so is everybody. And he's a center. He doesn't have to be as mobile as some of the other linemen, and I like him. I think he's tough.
I actually like Landon Dickerson a lot, and I have mocked him to us many times. Now, Zach, I'm going to let you beat us both up for this. Not that I think you don't like Landon Dickerson, but I know you have had statements in the back rooms at SCU where you've gone no pass. So why?
I can't get over the medicals. I mean, I'm sure I haven't seen anything with Alabama's pro days in terms of the medicals that came out of there, if they've done anything, and I haven't heard anything otherwise, but he has so many seasons ended while he's there. If it wasn't for the injuries, I think he's a better overall prospect than Creed Humphrey is. You know, I think he has the better size, better frame. You don't see 6'6" centers very often. You know, that's typically a guy that, you know, is going to be somewhere a little bit farther out wide. You know, typically that's why a lot of guys get shoved into the interior because they're vertically challenged. You know, so I think realistically, a guy like him, like he's just a mauler. He's a mauler. He gets after it. And I think his technique is, you know, better in a lot of ways than Humphrey. I think he's a better version of what Humphrey is. I think they have very similar athletic deficiencies, but I can't get past the injuries. And I really worry about him, you know, really getting in the league with guys that are, you know, not being able to be beat up on every week like Alabama does. And I really think that's going to potentially see a position where if you're going to use this capital, you expect them to be able to stay healthy. And it has nothing to do with the talent, because the talent's there. And if it wasn't for the injuries, I'd probably have him in all my drafts too. You know, I'm very hesitant because of the injuries, and hopefully a team gets him and hopefully he stays healthy and he turns into a perennial Pro Bowl caliber lineman. I think that's his ceiling. And I think some team will potentially luck out if he can do that. I'm skeptical.
I understand.
Makes sense.
I understand. I went, again, I stayed young, but I also went linebacker, but this time I went, I guess, outside. Although I'm not 100% convinced that this guy has to play outside. Zaven Collins, who a lot of people are all high on, you know, is from Tulsa. I probably wouldn't have taken him. I had my eye elsewhere, but the guy I wanted was gone. As often happens, and sometimes I get everything I want when I do these mock drafts, and other times, you know, I try and fiddle around too much and wait, and then the guy I want is gone, which is why, as Zach will tell you, there is no such thing as a reach. because you don't know. Somebody else wants that guy, and you think, oh, yeah, I got him marked for the third round, and he goes in the second. Does that mean they reached? And if you didn't take him in the second, did you reach? Not if he turns into a player, right? But I like this guy. I like the way he plays. I think he's got a lot of range. I just don't, you know, I think he's more an edge guy than he is inside, but I wonder, I just wonder if maybe they could find a way to use him internally because he's so athletic. And so maybe he could go in there, but I don't know. You know, maybe that's just wishful thinking because we didn't get the Edmonds brother that I wanted back in the day. And I just want this gigantic guy to run around on the inside. I don't know. But that was 34. So then we'll move to 39. Five picks later, Zach, at 39, my friend, what did you do?
So again, I with this capital the Steelers have, I really thought it was important for them to kind of go through and really look at a lot of these offensive linemen. You know, and this tackle class is very deep. You know, I went with Rashawn Slater, who is a tackle, but I think he's on the inside. So I think it was important for the Steelers to kind of go and get that true purebred tackle to really kind of get the benchmark out there. Whether, you know, Zach Banner's now here for 2 years, I don't know what's going to happen with Shaquem McCoy he's on the last of his rookie deal. Maybe the Steelers keep him. I really think he's going to be their starting left tackle going into the season over Zach Banner. So I still think Zach Banner's best fit really is only white right guard. I don't see him as a left tackle. So I think it's important for them to potentially get younger at that position. I'd be stunned if they didn't add a tackle at some point, at least in the first four rounds, because of the fact that it's too good of a class for you to not grab one. The Steelers have had a penchant for drafting Notre Dame guys in the second round. We've seen it with Claypool. We've seen it with Tuitt. I know those are just two examples and really the only two examples under Colbert, but I'm sticking with my guns here. I'm going with Liam Eichenberg. I think he really kind of fits that mold as a traditional left tackle. I think he is one of the closest pure fits to a left tackle outside of Christian Darrisaw in this class. I know a lot of people look at Samuel Cosmi and think that he also is there, but I have a lot of questions about Cosme's overall physical toughness and strength. I think he's a fine player, but I think he needs to add a little more weight to him. They really get to that point. I think Eichenberg is ready to go now, and I think he really is kind of a plug and play guy. I think he's really a really great run blocking left tackle. I think that he's smooth enough and has enough technique in his lower half to really make himself effective in the pass game. That, you know, if Adrian Clemens will continue to develop him in that regard and really get the most out of it, he could be a very good left tackle in the NFL. I don't know if he'll ever be an all pro caliber left tackle. They don't have to have an all-pro caliber left tackle, have a very good left tackle on the roster. You know, so I really think that, he'll develop in the way he needs to. But I think at this point, he's sitting there, and the Steelers haven't addressed tackle to that regard yet. There is kind of, at some point in the third round, there is a drop-off in tackle talent in this class, no matter how good it really is. You want to snag one of them. I think Eichenberg is like one of the last very good tackles up on the board at this point.
Yep, can't argue with that, Leanne.
Yeah, I agree. So I took Kyle Trask, and I have mixed feelings about it. I have to tell you, I beat myself up a lot. Stop laughing at me.
Stop. I'm not even crying. It's a reaction to you. I'm fine with it here.
No.
I have to say, though, that one of the things I really like about him is that he was so under-recruited out of high school. I like the guys that don't get a lot of looks. The Steelers like the guys that don't always get a lot of looks and attention. And we have a knack for turning those guys into something really good. And I think he could potentially be that. I'm concerned that he's not as mobile as I'd like him to be. But Tom Brady's not mobile, so get over it. I'm tired of hearing that's everybody's answer. He's not. I mean, you don't have to be everything. Do you know what I mean? But he's accurate. He's got a strong arm. He gets the ball downfield. He had one really bad game last year. In that game, he had all of his receivers were out, and so was Kyle Pitts. So who was he throwing to? I think the kid's got a lot of talent. I think it's talent that could be strongly developed. I think he'd do well to sit behind a Ben this year and really learn our system and have some opportunities with some real strong leadership, not get thrown to the wolves. I think he could be really good.
I forgot to mention that you're not allowed to draft quarterbacks.
I'm sorry. You didn't tell me that rule. Because I had Mac Jones on like seven picks in a row just to make sure I didn't miss him. And still pick Kyle Trask. So,
yeah.
See, I knew that would make you guys twitchy, so I didn't do Mac.
I'm glad because, look, not to insult your that my nickname for him is Doughboy.
Yeah, but, you know, Doughboy is a cannon, so.
I don't think he's a bad quarterback. I just don't think he's as good as everybody else thinks he is. But that being said,
he's been in a really good organization, which I think makes it really, really hard to tell. But the one thing I like about Mac Jones, and I think I think that Nick Saban does this really well. He keeps his guys there. He talks them into staying, mm-hmm. you know, when everybody else wants to run out for the draft at, you know, 19 or 20 or something, you know, Nick talks them in. He says, like, this, you can do it if you want to, but, you know, I think next year would be better for you. And guys stay in. It tends to pay off for them. And Max, I don't know what he saw coming, but he stayed and he bided his time there. He put in the hard work. And I feel like that kind of hard work and dedication and desire to want to be really good is something that a Trevor Lawrence, I'm not saying the kid doesn't work hard, but I'm saying when things have come so easily to you, you know, you don't always appreciate as much as somebody that's had to be there day and night putting in the hard work to get it. And I think I do think that Kyle Trask falls into that category, you know, where he's really put in the hard work to take over for Felipe Franks and be able to, yeah.
We will not mock you for mocking.
It's okay. You can mock me. Everybody mocks me. I don't care.
I'm adamant that that's not what we draft. But I said the same thing when they drafted Mason Rudolph. I wasn't mad at the pick. I just said it was a waste.
Yeah. And I don't know that I always think it's a great pick, but I felt like if there was a good quarterback still hanging around that late in the draft, at that point, it's not a wasted pick. I don't know if they'd trade up to do it at number one, but, you know, hanging around in the second round of the draft, if there's still somebody good hanging around, I don't see the downside.
We got 50 million picks in this draft, so what the heck?
Right. You can pick everybody. We're fielding a whole new team with this draft.
Yes, indeed. All right. So what I did at 39 was I waited until the second round to grab my tight end. And I went Big Ten tight end. Pat, I can't say his last name. You know, I can't pronounce anybody's name. Freiermuth. That guy. I like him. I don't love him. I think he's tough. I think he probably can provide a more Heath-like presence than we've had in a long time. I think he's a much more traditional tight end than somebody like Eric Ebron, who I love Eric Ebron. I think Eric Ebron is a fun guy. I just wish he'd catch the ball more often.
But my Uncle Pete's a fun guy. He shouldn't be playing football.
Yes. But I think Freiermuth, I think this could be a guy that could stick. You know, they haven't had a lot of success in drafting tight ends recently, but then again, they've been picking them in the sixth and seventh round or whatever. And despite it all, Jesse James caught it. So, so that's where I went, with Freiermuth. And now we drop. Now we actually have to move later in the draft. Wow. We don't have another pick for 14, 15, 16 picks. What are we going to do? 55, and we'll flip it back around. Leanne, you get to go next again. 55.
I have Zach's pedigree right here with Asante Samuels Jr. I really like the kid a lot. I think he's great. I think he's not his dad, and I think he gets compared to him quite a bit, which is unfair. He's a little bit undersized, but I think we could pack some weight on him and get him, you know, not taller, obviously, but a little bit bigger. I think he's really good. I think he's good in man coverage. I think he's got some surprising speed there. I think he's a solid pickup that late in the draft.
I got no arguments with that. They're going to address corner, I think, some point.
Yeah.
Zach, any issues with that pick?
No, because I also picked Asante Samuel at this point as well. I think, again, looking at the breadcrumbs, you know, Steelers always lay them out there, and really no draft should ever surprise people because the Steelers always leave the breadcrumbs, and every now and then, you know, there's a Chase Claypool or Juju Smith-Schuster that surprises everyone, and they didn't see it coming. But, like, traditionally speaking, there's always someone there, and I really think Asante, again, we're looking at the corners they're talking to. They're not talking to the run-of-the-mill corners in this class. They're talking to some of the more high-pedigree, you know, guys that are kind of those blue chip prospects. And Asante Samuel, again, just like J.C. Horn, has that pedigree of being the bloodline of a former NFL football player. And I agree with you. I don't think he should be as compared to his dad as he should be. I think that's kind of unfair to him. And I think he really has a lot of very good opportunities to be his own Asante Samuel. And I really think that, you know, his versatility is something that J.C. Horn doesn't have. So I think J.C. Horn is firmly a boundary corner. I think Asante Samuel is a boundary corner, who kind of has that Cam Sutton versatility, being able to bump inside there. And obviously the loss of Mike Hilton, you know, Joe Hayden's not playing forever. That's why it wouldn't surprise me to see them go in this direction with this many picks to double dip a corner, because you really only have Cam Sutton, Justin Lane, and James Pierre long-term on the roster. And who knows how long-term Cam Sutton really is. And Joe Hayden, sure, he's playing right now, but who knows when he's going to decide to hang it up, or the wheels just all of a sudden come falling off in a drastic fashion. So, you know, that's one thing. We had this conversation with the back channels before, where Corner is always going to be a potential move for them because of a lack of other people. And Asante Samuel, just like J.C. Horn, makes too much sense for what they look for. And if he's still sitting there at 55, regardless of what they do in the first round, I think it would make sense for them to go that route.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I like having smart people around me, because I don't, you know, that you guys have good smart reasons. I didn't do that, though, this time. I went in a different direction. And the guy that I picked is a defensive line guy. I was inspired to do this because I worried about Tyson Alualu. And for those who don't understand, we've been plotting this draft for a while and trying to get our schedules all aligned. And so I did this before we knew Alualu was going to sign elsewhere. But I was a little worried about it, mostly because the Steelers just didn't seem to have the money to do what they were going to do. And I didn't know what was going to happen. And so there's a guy that I liked, and I'm trying to figure out how to pronounce his name again, but there's a key somewhere. I saw it. Tufele.
Tufele. There you go.
Jay Tufele from yes. USC. And I'll tell you why. I like my Jay Wobble. I loved my Jay Wobble. I wanted Jay Wobble to stay here forever because Jay Wobble was awesome. This kid reminds me of Javon Hargrave a little bit, but stronger. And what I mean by that is I think he's got that same burst that Javon had coming out. His hips, you know, not to say I'm staring at this guy's hips all the time, but his hips they're strong. Man, the kid has some push, and I like that. Do I think that this is an important pick for them? Probably not, but I got the luxury of extra picks, right? And I think that this is the kind of guy that can solidify that line a little bit again. I just like it. I like him a lot. So that's where I went with whatever number we're on. What number are we on? I can't even remember. I can't see because I'm
55.
55. All right. So we'd now drop down to 66. Hey, you know, I didn't do that on purpose. I didn't give us 55, 66, and 77, but I didn't give us 77, so it's okay. 66, I'm just going to go first this time. Why? Because it's another name I can't pronounce, but it's a Samoan safety, and I have a partiality to USC Samoan safeties. I have no idea why that would be. I've picked him in every mock I've done so far when we get down this late. Talanoa Hufan. I'll learn your name if we draft you. but again, I this late in the draft, I think it's a guy that can bolster that backfield, the safety position. I don't know whether Terrell Edmunds' fifth year is going to get pulled. I don't know whether they're going to have to make a choice between Minka or Terrell. I think they're going to have to provide depth, and I like this kid. I think he can grow. And again, is this Samoan safety? We got one going to the hall. Why not?
You almost don't need to say anything else.
Yeah, I know. He's a Samoan safety. I'm in. I'm all in on that. All right. Zach, what'd you do at 66 or wherever we are now?
I don't know if he falls this far, but I wanted to continue my offensive line renaissance right now. So I really kind of went with another Bama guy with Alex Leatherwood. I think if this class was a little bit weaker, he probably would go earlier. And with him kind of being a tweener, but, you know, I really think that he could be a guy that really should play guard. He has experience at guard and tackle, obviously, but I think his best fit is going to be guard. And with Artie Slater being picked and with, you know, Eichenberg being picked already, and then you already have Dotson. I mean, that's starting to rebuild that line with three very high caliber players. And I really think you think of an interior with Dotson, Slater, Leatherwood for the next, you know, however many years on the interior. That's a very exciting prospect, not just for the run game, but for the interior pass protection, the athleticism that group would bring, and the strength and power. Like, those guys are all maulers. They're all nasty dispositions. You know, I really think Leatherwood, you know, he's a very good zone blocking lineman. You do a lot of gap stuff things as well, but he does a very good job in terms of getting his hips around, climbing to the second level, sealing off guys from the play side. I think you get him going with Slater, that'll be moving people left and right. And then if he's next to Banner, you know, Banner's still in town at right tackle. I mean, that's a heck of a right side of an offensive line. And obviously the left side at that point, then you'd have Eichenberg and Dotson. like that's a very good offensive line, assuming that these guys would develop the way you'd want them to. But you don't draft a guy if you don't think he can develop. So the entire point is to go and have him be in that capacity. But I think that if he's sitting there at this point, even with two other offensive line picks already, I'd be dumb to pass him up there. So I went with Leatherwood.
Well, remember what I did last time. I drafted an entire offensive line. Every single position I drafted, I got rid of the entire, I even dumped Dotson out and I didn't want to. I just drafted an entire offensive line, which is why I didn't really do that this time, because I did that last time. All right, Leanne, what did you do at 66?
So when I did this, I didn't know we were going to sign the kid from Georgia. So I went with a wide receiver and I picked Elijah Moore. I knew we were keeping Juju, but I was still okay with picking somebody. I like the depth. And then I was going to change it out. I told you I kind of obsessed over this yesterday and earlier today, and I was going to change it out. But here's why I decided to keep him, because he got in trouble for doing some like OBJ type stuff where he pretended to be a dog and peed after he made a touchdown reception. And I decided that if we could channel that and rein that in, he and Juju could come up with some great dances and we could really make the Mark Maddens of the world's head explode with the things they come up with. And that to me alone is worth the draft pick. So there you go.
Something that makes Mark Madden's head explode.
There you right? I like the kid though. And you know, I will say that I kind of started looking at a lot of like best player available when I got down this far. And I don't know if the kid will really fall this far, but he's projected to in a lot of the mock drafts. And he's being underlooked at for being so over-recognized. He won the Biletnikoff Award. He was like a 4-star recruit out of high school. The kid's got great hands, which I think is something we could really use. And I think with some strong leadership, like the guy earlier, like Rousseau, I think he could really come into his own and be a really good receiver.
All right. I got no arguments with that. As we'll see when we get to the last three picks that we have for this draft, I kind of took my crack at wide receiver and picked the same guy twice, sort of basically looking to get somebody who was fast and could run really far. And I figured one of them will stick, maybe.
There you go.
but we'll see. All right. So that takes us out of 66, 78. Zach, why don't you start us off at 78?
Probably a little bit earlier than where I would go with here, but it's kind of the same exact thing with Alex Highsmith. And I'm saying that because I really think him and Alex Highsmith are the same. I mentioned this on Twitter the other day. Patrick Johnson out of Tulane, edge defender, really kind of fits that same prototypical mold as Alex Highsmith, where he's kind of that 3-4, you know, edge, stand up, put his hand in the dirt, can maybe drop into coverage and get him coached up in that capacity, relentless motor, kind of a lack of length. Like these are all the same things that were said about Alex Highsmith last year. Kind of has that small FBS pedigree as well, because you know, he's not playing in the SEC. He's not playing in the ACC or the Big Ten. So he's not getting all the hype. And surprisingly, like Johnson's not being talked about really that much at all. And I really think that he's a guy that can come in there and have the similar type of impact as Highsmith. Now, what interest the Steelers have, I don't know, but you can't go with every single pre-draft tracker pick. You know, there's always going to be one or two. I think Johnson just really kind of fits the mold there. And there is a need. You know, I don't care if they re-signed Marsh. You know, I don't care that they have Christian Kuntz. You know, like they're gonna add a edge defender at some point in time, whether it's via the draft or via the free agency. You know, so I think really you get a guy like him behind Highsmith, you find another body to put back there, whether it's March or whatever, to kind of spell Watt. You have a very solid young developmental room that could really get after the quarterback there and do a lot of different things well.
All right, no arguments from me. Leanne, how about you at whatever number we're at, 60, 78?
Yeah, so I didn't pick a running back early like you guys did with Travis Etienne. So I picked one here and went with Kenneth Gainwell out of Memphis. I think he's undersized, which concerns me a little bit. I mean, I know we could put some weight on him. I'd like to see him be a little bit bigger. But the kid is good, and he's got some speed. He picks up and hits top speed really quickly, which was kind of surprising watching some film on him. He's explosive. He's not afraid to get his hands dirty. I saw some film of him doing some blocking and things like that, which was really kind of nice to see. I think he's you know, he's kind of an interesting kid. And again, like that late in the draft, if somebody like him were still available, I think he would be really good. He's quick.
All right. Yeah, that'll make Zacadonia our other resident Zach, who spells his name wrong. Zeke, you probably know him as Zeke Flash out there. Zacadonia has, I will steal his line, which is his possession is literally in his name. He gains well. He's obviously a running back, right? So Zacadonia will love that. And he loves it when we talk about him on the podcast.
Well, who doesn't love to be talked about?
He gets all litty. Or whatever the words are. I can't figure it out. I don't understand any of that crap. All right. So I'm blaming you, Zach, for this pick as well. Because this is another guy you pushed at me. And after I went and looked at him, I thought, I kind of like this kid. And that is Diami Brown, wide receiver out of North Carolina. Again, I primarily took him because I think he can be a deep threat that they don't really have. Just a guy who can get open really quick down the field. The thing that struck me, and Zach, you could tell me if I'm wrong here, but in looking at some of his tape, he has a great ability to track the ball over his shoulder. He's just, you know, that kind of swanish, stalwartish, I can find it and get it. I don't see as much of it. People always want to turn to the ball, or they, you know, it's that back shoulder stuff. This kid can get it and track it and do that kind of over the shoulder catching. I really liked it when I was watching. So that's where I went at 78. And I know that the wide receiver room is very full now, and I don't know if he can stick. But hey, we got extra picks, right? All right, so we go. We flip that 7 and 8 around and go to 87 because that's where we are next. And I'm just going to get my pick out of the way. Again, Zach convinced me to look at this kid. So I'm blaming you for my entire draft. Trey Hill, the center out of Georgia. I didn't pick it. I didn't pick, you know, a bunch of offensive line guys early. And I will admit primarily it's because most of the guys I wanted were gone. But this feels even more better now because the Steelers have been to the Georgia Pro Day. And I do like the kid. I think that he probably isn't an instant plug and play kind of starter, but you got Finney there for a year. You let the O-line coaches get a hold of him. You let the other, you know, David DeCastro talk to him. You let them learn him up a bit. I think that this guy could be your center of the future. So that's the direction that I went. Leanne, let's jump back to you. 87.
Yeah, I picked Andre Sisco, the safety out of Syracuse. He had a torn ACL in 2020, so he didn't get the playing time that he should have, but we're at 87 in the draft, so. And I think we need one. I think the kid is worked really hard and got some recognition, but hasn't quite achieved what you would have expected him to with like all the hard work he put in, which I find a little bit concerning. But he is, you know, he had a really strong 2019 season, making a lot of tackles, making a lot of really good tackles. He's got a lot of speed and range, but it'll be interesting to see how he bounces back from the injury that he had. And then it's always hard too without having a combine or some of the other things to really get like a really good look at him. But I thought at this level of the draft, this late in the draft, I thought he was interesting.
All right. I still think safety is a need. I have no doubt about it.
It's a need.
Great. Yep. Zach, how about you? 87.
So I was really kind of caught between two guys. You know, I know you guys are talking about how the Steelers have a really kind of loaded receiver room, but until, you know, Kevin Colbert decides to not draft the receiver, it's one position I always automatically put right into my mock draft somewhere, some way. And, you know, in my mind, even with the, you know, Tyler Simmons being signed out of the UGA Pro Day, you know, and even with Juju coming back on a 1-year deal, Juju is still hardly a guaranteed thing after this season, although I do think he has a better chance of being in Pittsburgh long-term now than he did a week ago. James Washington, I would be surprised if he stays in Pittsburgh. He's I really think he's going to want to go someplace where he can be the guy. And with Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool, behind him, I feel like he's probably going to feel like he's never going to be the guy here. So I'd be stunned if he comes back, and really I don't think the Steelers are going to want to pay him. You know, they play him so little to begin with. So it really gives the opportunity for the Steelers to kind of bring in somebody to kind of be a third guy if and when Juju does walk, once James Washington lightly walks. And I really kind of went with the tea leaves again on this one. It was either Seth Williams or Anthony Schwartz. Not with Anthony Schwartz, Schwartz, because of the fact that I think he kind of fits that slot role that the Steelers are looking for at receiver. They clearly show the interest, but he is truly a burner. I mean, he's a track star. He plays extraordinarily well out of the slot, which is something that we all think that Juju does very well. And I really think that is Juju's best fit, is just being a big physical slot guy. You know, Schwartz does extremely well. His track speed shows off. He's very willing in the run game. I'm not saying he's going to ever be Juju or Hines Ward. No one's ever going to confuse him with either one of those guys. But he's more than willing to get do the dirty work and really kind of block from the slot, cracking down the box, stop blocking on the outside. And really, anytime he gets the ball in his hands, you kind of have to hold your breath because you're thinking, okay, this guy's going to score. You know, and I really think that you put him vertically, you know, whether it's with Ben or somebody else down the road in the future, I think he's going to be really to kind of take the top off of defense and really going to want that kind of additional slot threat kind of coming over the middle of all his speed. So even though the room's loaded, I felt it was better for them to get a guy like him. It's probably a little bit early for him at 87, but, you know, a guy like him in another receiver class that's loaded, and with how dried up this free agency class is, I really think there's going to be a run on receivers at some point. And again, I don't think reaches are a thing as much as fans want to make them seem, just because your favorite Twitter draft analyst said the guy should have gone later. If the team likes the guy and he's high enough on their board, you pull the trigger and take him. And I think the Steelers are going to fall in love with what they saw in Schwartz, and just in the times they apparently already had meetings with him. So
thanks for stealing my 128. This happens all the time.
Probably a better spot for him, honestly. 120 is probably a better spot for him here.
How many years have we been doing this nonsense? And every time that Zach and I get on, it'll be, at some point it's like, man, you picked my pick. All right, well, now we know what I was doing at 128. So we could just move right along. Thank you very much. That was my other one. It was like, okay, I'm going to take Diami. I'm going to take Anthony Schwartz. One of them will fit. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
All right. So 128, last pick for the Steelers in this draft, because we traded the bottom half of the draft away. Leanne, what did you do?
I picked the defensive tackle out of Ohio State, Tommy Tagai. I like the kid. I don't think he's, you know, he's not great. He's not going to go away early. I know. It's all for you.
Go Bucks!
No, but I actually like him. He's really explosive. He's really strong, which I think is huge. I think some of the skills that he needs to work on, he gets kind of tied up a little bit easily, which I don't think is terribly surprising where he is, but that's something that can be worked on. Some of the other stuff, the innate stuff that he has, the strength and the way he kind of reads, reads opponents and has good hands and kind of gets in there and gets in the mix and isn't afraid to get dirty. Those things you can't teach as easily. The footwork, the other stuff you can work on. So I think that they could bulk him up a little bit. He needs to probably gain some weight and work on some of those other things. I don't see him starting right away, but I see him providing some depth and learning the system. Yeah.
All right. I'm never going to argue with me about a Buckeye. Well, maybe. I still say they're going to draft Drew Chrisman in the seventh round. Just because I want him to draft a punter so that everyone will lose their mind.
Oh, my goodness.
All right,
a really Zach. Good punter. It'd be worth it.
Yeah. Zach, 128, my friend.
I won't tight end here because I do think they'll add a tight end at some point. I'm going to trade McKitty out of Georgia again, reading the tea leaves. I don't like to construct my entire draft based off of who they visit with, but I do think it's a very good, you know, point to find these guys. I think McKitty teams are either going to look at his 2019 tape and fall in love with it, or they're going to look at his 2020 tape and say this guy has some inconsistencies. I don't know how much of that was based off of the scope he had right before in his knee before the season started this year. And obviously with COVID, I partly wanted to get some of these guys a mulligan, when it comes to just their overall preparation, shortens off season. Had a knee scope, how much of that was based off of that. But you look at the pedigree, he's very athletic, he's very good after the catch. I think you kind of pair him with Ebron, he'd be a very good option there. Obviously, you still have guys like Raider if the Steelers want to keep him around as a blocking option there. But I think McKitty does a lot of things well. He's willing to block. I think he's more willing to block than Ebron is. I don't think he's a whole lot better, but he has that want-to, which means you can coach him up and hopefully get to a point where he is going to be at least an effective blocker, but you're not drafting him because he's a good blocker. You're drafting him because he's heavily involved in the pass game. You know, and if Matt Canada, again, trying to figure out what he's going to do with this offense, they've done a lot of 12 personnel stuff in the past with him, or at least, you know, some sort of 21 personnel getting two backs on there. I think if you go 12 personnel and you have him out there with Ebron, Those are two athletic pass catching tight ends you can do a lot with, or you can have, you know, him being a willing blocker to at least get you something in the run game with NTM. You know, but I feel like they have to add a tight end at some point. I don't see them going this season with Raider being their number two or Gentry being their number two with Gentry's lack of experience and Raider's lack of experience. I don't think they're going to want that situation. They're going to want to add at least somebody that has some level of pedigree behind those guys, but behind Ebron, a few of those other guys. So I figured McKitty was better than anybody to do that at this point.
There's some kind of a joke here about McKitty and being in the AFC North and playing the Bengals. I just don't know what it is. There's just, if something is there, I just don't know where. I have to think about that. Sometimes you just got to follow where they go. And you know, we all like to say Steelers are very mysterious about how they draft and where they draft. But in hindsight, you can almost always go, "Duh, I should have known that."
They brought him in for a visit. They had someone at his pro day. They took him out to dinner. They lined and dined him, whatever. They've always had some interaction. There's always the random Claypool and Juju in there. But, you know, 9 times out of 10, most of the draft is, you know, between the lines.
That's just when Kevin Colbert goes into, like, the mystery wide receiver room and goes, "Tell me who is going to be awesome." And then he picks
this guy. This guy.
Yep. Yeah, that guy. All right. Well, that wraps up Mock Draft Insanity Volume 2. Whether we do a third one or not, I don't know at this point. It really is such a tough year, because without a combine, with a limited amount of things, it's tough. And I don't even see as many mock drafts coming out as I'm used to. I can't yell at people. It's annoying to me. I can't get upset because stupid NFL analysts are drafting things that they shouldn't. Very, very troubling. See, that's my favorite part of the mock draft season, is being able to mock the mock drafts.
Right.
And I can't, because there's nobody to mock. They're not doing it because they don't know what to do. So, Zach, as always, thank you, sir, for joining us. And for those of you who'd like to know, I think I mentioned it earlier, Utica, what is it? I know there's a moose in the middle. There's a moose in the middle of your field.
Yeah, we're the pioneers of mascots and moose.
Yeah. Okay. So the Utica Pioneers, 1-0, future head coach of someplace in the NFL, and he's going to give me tickets.
Awesome.
That's all I care about. hopefully the Steelers. Zach, thanks as always for joining us. Leanne, it was an absolute pleasure to
Thank
have
you
royalty
for
on the show. It's great. For those of you who don't know, you can follow her on Twitter. Is it at Hollywood Loman?
It is.
Okay. And if she's been writing for
Berkspire United, for Jason Shetler.
Yeah, it put together some really good articles. You know, one of which is the reason she's here, because I read it. I already knew you were smart. I've watched your tweets. I know you're a smart person, but I read the article and I went, she deserves to be on Mock Draft Insanity because she's smart.
Well, thank you.
So
glad to be here.
And we appreciate it. That's going to wrap it up for us on this edition of Steel City Underground Podcast. I remain the ancient one who yells at the clouds. Thank you for joining us. Remember to like, subscribe, comment. Please comment. You guys have been great commenting recently. Keep it up, and we will see you. We will catch you next time when Joe and I return and talk about some other nonsense. Who knows? But maybe we won't even talk about Mark Madden anymore. we'll have to wait and see. So again, as I like to say at the end of all this, it is in fact chaos out there. So be kind.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.